So today what we're going to do is we're going to talk about SharePoint and Windows Azure. Probably you've been waiting a long time to hear those two words in the same sentence. One of the new features that were announced a couple weeks ago was the ability to run SharePoint VMs inside of Windows Azure. And so then the next question has become, well, how do we do that? So we'll talk through some of these issues. We'll see how to build these farms and how to automate the farms, and then talk about some tips and tricks along the way. So my name is Paul Stubbs. I'm a solutions architect in the Windows Azure Center of Excellence. I'm based in Redmond. We have a worldwide team. We have a guy here in Amsterdam. We have one in the UK, one in Singapore, a few in the States. And we go around and we help facilitate large-scale, high-volume, real-world production Azure sites. And so as part of this, we're starting to also now pick up production sites for running SharePoint on Windows Azure as well. So again, the big news, you guys may know these people if you're familiar with SharePoint. These are like your extended family. Right? You probably see these people every day working with SharePoint. You get to know them really well. Now these guys run on Azure, right? So that's kind of the big, you know, we've always had that question, you know, well, when will SharePoint run on Windows Azure, right? And we had Office 365, which runs in the same data center as Windows Azure, but it doesn't run on Windows Azure. And so now we have the ability to run our SharePoint farms on Windows Azure. So we're going to talk a little bit about why we'd want to do that, what's motivating us to make that jump and move to the cloud. And we're going to look at how do we set up a developer environment, and then we're going to look at how we actually build a full farm from that you can actually run in production. And then we'll show you basically how to automate it, because in the end, real deployments happen through automation, not through clicking on the screens in the UI. So we'll show you how to do that through PowerShell to totally automate basically end-to-end your farm deployment with SharePoint. So why would I use SharePoint in the cloud? Well, the same reason that you would do any application in the cloud applies equally to SharePoint. So you can think of this as really just a generic slide that you probably see in every deck this week about the cloud, that the benefits of the cloud, you know, apply equally well to SharePoint. So we get all of these features. You know, we have the ability to IT to be more agile. They can quickly spin up farms and makes it much easier for them to get started. You know, we can focus on our application. You know, the whole goal of the PaaS model in Windows Azure was, I don't need to worry about the infrastructure. I don't need to worry about all the stuff, buying servers, installing servers, racking servers, finding a building to host them in, right? All that stuff goes away with the cloud. It allows me to really focus on my application at hand. And then the economics of it. You know, the efficiency that the Azure team is doing in terms of cloud development is pretty amazing. Excuse me. You know, even if you run the most efficient data center or you think your data center is super efficient, you can't imagine the efficiencies and the level of things that they look at and go to. And the number of people that they use to man these is so small. You know, we're talking, you know, one person per 15,000 servers or something. I mean, the number is amazingly efficient. And for you to get to that efficiency level is going to be a challenge. And so this is where the cost savings come in. So that efficiency leads to better optimization, better security, better performance, better uptime at a lower cost than what you can typically provide in your own data centers. So the thing here is what we have is this sort of graph here about control and efficiency and cost. So typically today or in the past, you run SharePoint on-premise. It gives you lots of control. You can tweak every bit. You have total control of the hardware. You own everything end to end. But the price you pay is in your cost and efficiency. You're paying the maximum amount for that. On the other end of the scale, we have sort of our software as a service platform, Office 365, which gives us SharePoint Online. And SharePoint Online is very easy and cheap to get started, but you give up some control. It doesn't have all the features that you can get in this SharePoint environment here. For example, I can't run farm level of full trust solutions, right? Things like that. But I can just walk up to the website, sign up with a credit card, and I have a SharePoint instance running in a few minutes. So I lose that control, but I gain efficiency, right? And I just pay for what I'm using. But now what we have is the option of something kind of in the middle, which is I can give up a little bit of control, but I get back a little bit of control, so I'm kind of in the middle. And my cost efficiency is kind of in the middle. So that I'm running the VMs, I'm running SharePoint and the VMs in the cloud, but I have full control over the bits on those VMs. So it's kind of right in the middle. So it gives you that choice. So when you think about, well, where do we want to run SharePoint, kind of think about where you are on the spectrum of things to do. And this applies for a lot of the cloud things in the cloud. For example, think about SQL Server, right? You could run SQL Server on-premise. You can run Windows Azure SQL databases in the cloud, or you can run SQL in a VM in the new Windows Azure VM role, which is what I'm going to show you. So what kind of workloads can we run in Windows Azure? We think about primarily being Fizz sites, so if you want to stand up a internet-facing kind of site, typically these are anonymous sites. These are sites that you would see for your .com. That's one environment. The other one that we see a big uptake in is in the developer test and staging environment. You think about how many developers you have in your environment, and for SharePoint, each SharePoint developer has to develop on a SharePoint instance. And so a lot of times it's difficult to provide those SharePoint instances for the developers because of the hardware requirements or policies you have within your company. It's difficult to stand up a server or something inside your environment. And so with this environment, you can think about this as quickly spinning up a developer image, do some testing, do some development, tear it down, stand up a staging environment quickly, run a test, and tear it down. Again, paying for what you use, so you're not paying for a whole staging or a whole developer environment, so you don't have to buy devs all new machines and laptops to do SharePoint development. Another space that's interesting is around hybrid applications. And I would probably say that every SharePoint application that you build will be a hybrid application, which means that typically you won't move like your entire SharePoint farm to the cloud, right? You'll move parts of your SharePoint to the cloud, but there'll still be things that are on-premise. Maybe you have some data in your mainframe on-premise that you want to access, or maybe you have some existing data somewhere else, or maybe you're accessing SAP. Those are examples of doing the hybrid. And so that's very common. But we also see hybrid going the other way, which is hybrid going to Windows Azure. So maybe I'm leveraging SharePoint, but I'm using SQL database in Windows Azure to do that, right? So it's not just hybrid on-premise, but it's hybrid across from cloud to cloud. And the last interesting scenario we see is disaster recovery. Disaster recovery is a really big area, I think, for Windows Azure in general, which is typically I have a site, sort of, for example, a SharePoint site on-premise, and what do I do for backup for recovery for that? You typically have another site either in a warm standby or a hot standby mode ready to go, so which means basically you double your hardware costs for disaster recovery. But imagine if you stood that up into Windows Azure instead and use something like Traffic Manager to manage the load balance or the failover to that cloud. You can imagine having that environment up in a warm standby or even a cold standby with the ability to quickly spin up more instances as you need them to handle load. And we see this pattern a lot for a lot of different scenarios. So just briefly touch upon hybrid a little bit more. We talked about hybrid being the ability to have an application that spans multiple platforms. And so in this case, we'd have SharePoint in an IIS role that's talking to some on-prem service through either service bus or virtual networking. And in the virtual network, you can access everything on-prem, including AD, all services, just as if you're on the network. But if we also go over to Windows Azure to talk about that, now we have service bus relay available to us. We have service bus messaging. We can do services in Azure that then surface other data. So, for example, if I have a bunch of blobs or images in Azure storage, I can use BCS on SharePoint to access those blobs as if they were a list in SharePoint, right? And so it makes it very easy to create these hybrid scenarios. And we also see hybrid across Office 365 as well, right? So that's another source. And that could be either Office 365 calling to your on-premise or calling back to your IIS instance, or the other way around, right? It works both ways. And you saw this a little bit in the keynote, this hybrid concept in the keynote, right? You remember the keynote, the AvPoint demo for the keynote? That was, we had two sites. We had one in Windows Azure, and we had one on-premise. And in that case, we were publishing data, but that could have easily been used for failover or high or some sort of high availability. But the ability to have those sites geo-replicated or located in multiple data centers and on-premise becomes very powerful. If you guys have any questions along the way, just stop me and shout out. So how do I migrate my site to the cloud? Where do I begin? Well, when you start to look at your site, let's imagine you have an existing SharePoint site. You need to think about some of the software requirements you have. Do I have third-party controls or third-party software running in my SharePoint farm that doesn't work, or I have some other dependency and I can't make it work? Are there licensing restrictions that prevent me from moving some third-party control to the cloud, right? So these are things to consider when you do an inventory of your on-premise site. Think about what that looks like. Are there hardware requirements? Are there hardware things in my farm that prevent me from moving to Windows Azure? For example, do I have some hard dependency on network adapters, right? I mean, this is a common one for a lot of companies are doing kind of reverse proxy to SharePoint, you know, which requires multiple network adapters to run that through a kind of reverse proxy server. So think about how you have your farm set up and how you want to migrate that forward. So other migration approaches, so forklift migrations, call this lift and shift, your mess for less. You know, just move your existing SharePoint site up into the cloud, basically unchanged, right? Kind of an IIS to PaaS migration is another approach. It's the way to think about, are there pieces and are there parts of your SharePoint farm that you could move or migrate to a PaaS role, right? Because ultimately we see PaaS as the future of cloud computing. And so how do you move your parts out? Maybe there's some lists, or maybe there's a database, or maybe there are files in your farm that you could move into Windows Azure Storage or move into SQL Azure, right, in Windows Azure SQL databases, and separate that out from your SharePoint farm. Are there farm-level solutions in your SharePoint farm that would make more sense, instead of having it as a SharePoint service, to have it as a Windows Azure service that you can then call from SharePoint, right? Are there parts that you can split out? And so that's what we think about as a hybrid migration. So there are really two things you can do here. So you can start with your existing virtual machines. One of the great things about the Windows Azure virtual machines are that they're just simply Hyper-V VHDs. So if you're running SharePoint Farm, for example, in Hyper-V on-premise in Windows Server, you can take those VHD files and just copy them to the cloud, just copy them to Azure Cloud Storage, and then attach them as VMs. So that's one approach. The other approach is to actually just build the SharePoint farm in the cloud on the fly using things like PowerShell, and that's the approach that we're going to show you near the end. This is, we're just going to spin up a standard Windows Server virtual machine. We're going to install all the prereqs that we need. We're going to install SharePoint. We're going to do all of that programmatically to our cloud images. So two approaches you can do, either upload your VHD or build the VHD on the fly in the cloud. Okay. So how does a SharePoint developer get started? And this is probably the easiest way to get started. If you really don't know anything about SharePoint, or you're not a SharePoint developer, or you're not a SharePoint IT pro, this is probably the best way to get started, because it allows you to just copy some files and have a SharePoint farm running. But this also applies for your daily SharePoint developers, and you may want to take this approach as well for them. So the first thing we want to do here is we want to leverage an existing SharePoint VHD. And in this case, I'm going to use the SharePoint Information Worker VHD that the product team puts out. Is everybody familiar with this VHD? Yes? So this VHD is fully self-contained. It has SharePoint, it has AD, it has Visual Studio. It has everything you need to get started doing development on a SharePoint machine, which is basically a standalone developer box is what it amounts to. So in this case, what we have here is I have this VHD, and the VHD is 2010-10A. That's the version number of the Information Worker VHD that's out there today. And so what I need to do is I need to actually start by downloading that VHD. Then once I download the VHD, I need to actually upload it into Blob Storage, into my storage account, and I do that using a tool called CS Upload. Once I have that up into my storage account using CS Upload, I can then create an instance, a VM, from that VHD. Then once I have that instance created, I can add endpoints to it, such as port 80 or port 443, and then I'm off I go doing my development work. Questions about this? All right, so let's take a look at what this is going to look like here. So the first thing I want to do is I'll show it to you running here. So here on my account, what I have is I have this instance of this machine called SPDev 2010. You can see it resides in the East US data center. And the DNS name is SPDev 2010 as well. If I drill down into the information about the VM, you can see statistics about how long it's been running. We can see how many cores I have that I'm using. In this case, on this account, I have 20. This VM is using 4 cores. And importantly, what you can see down here is that it's using the disk. And if we look down here at the bottom, we can see the actual file name in Blob Storage that we're using for the VM. So my storage account is called SharePoint Farm. The folder is in the disk folder, and the file name is SharePoint 2010-10A.vhd. And we'll show you how that got there in a second. But once we have our image there, all we need to do now is we click on Connect. We get our RDP session opens up here, and we can connect to this session. Now, these are just standard RDP sessions, so kind of one of the tips would be that instead of just clicking on that and clicking open, what you probably want to do is do save and save that to your desktop somewhere. And then once you save that file to your desktop, you can actually, I'm going to show you here really, because this is kind of cool. So if I just do save as, save it to my desktop here, and then if I open my desktop to that file, what you can do is right-click on it and choose Edit. And then once you edit it, it's just a standard RDP file, which you guys are probably familiar with. You can change the behavior of how you want the quality, whether you want your local resources to appear, which is good. So you click on Drives. And then when you go to that VHD, then your C and D drives of your local machine will be available on that machine, so you can copy files back and forth if you want to. The other one, which is kind of cool, is you can set the performance here, so you can see backgrounds. It makes it nicer or faster. But the one that I use when I'm in the office doing real work is I do set this one here, which is use all my monitors, which then gives you multi-monitor support for your VHDs in the cloud, right? So you can use all the monitors you have as a developer. All right, let's see if this is up yet. You know, one of the things that we had some feedback on was that some people were saying, well, there's something you need to do to the VHD to before you upload it. You need to set some static IPs. And there's nothing you need to do. Literally just copy the VHD file to your storage account, attach it, and run it. That's all you need to do. So if you run across any posts that tell you otherwise, now you know. So once we have this up and running, we can see that's a standard image. Our friends are here on a home page, which makes us happy because now we know everything's good. You can see this image here, actually intranet.contoso.com. There are actually a number of sites on this VHD, which is kind of cool. So if you come out here to the central admin, we can see that we have a number of websites available to us to try out. So there's HR Web and Internet and LCA Web. So there's a bunch of different setups and scenarios that this VHD is used for. And the other great thing is this VHD is the foundation for all the training materials. So if you download the SharePoint training kit, it uses this VHD to do all the labs. So you can do that yourself. Again, it has Visual Studio on it. So if you want to do some development, you can go ahead and start developing projects. Okay, so let's take a quick look at how we built this machine. I think we're done here. One other tip I'll just tell you briefly here, because we'll do this frequently, is if I go to see Windows, System 32, drivers, etc., hosts. One of the things is you need to make sure that you do a local mapping so that you can type in intranet.contoso.com and it goes to the right thing. Otherwise, you'll be trying it and the site won't work and you'll be wondering. So if I wanted to go to the HR web, I would come in here and add a new entry in my host file for that as well. So this is something common that we'll see quite frequently. All right, let's minimize that. Now, so what I need to do is I need to actually download the file and copy it out there to this thing. So how do we do that? Well, what I've done is I have another account here, and I've created a server in the cloud called just a copy server. So this is just a plain old, I said, file gallery, create me a new Windows server, and then I'm going to use this server in the cloud to do my copying for me. So I don't have to download the bits locally to my own network and then upload them back into the cloud again from my machine. I do everything up in the cloud by creating this kind of temporary server. So if we look at this here, let's see, we need to reconnect. And so now what happens is I can leverage the bandwidth of Windows Azure to copy from one machine to the other without having to bring it down locally into my own machine. I'll go through this a little bit in detail so that basically later when you're watching the video, you can recreate the steps and do it yourself online, because this is really kind of the getting started version of where we need to go. So the first thing I need to do is I need to actually download that image. So what I need to do is go find it. And the easiest way to find it is open your favorite search engine, Bing, and type SharePoint Information Worker VHD. And then, of course, it takes you to my blog, which in here we have a link to download the image. And so you come here, you have the image here that you can download. Let's make this a little bit smaller. So now there's a bunch of files that you should download. So this image, just to kind of give you a little heads up if you're not familiar with this image, has three parts to it. There's an A, a 10A, a 10B, and a 10C. So 10A is SharePoint and Office and everything. 10B is Exchange. So if you want to actually simulate running Exchange, that's all set up for you as well. And then C is Link Server. So if you want to do Presence and other link stuff. So really, you just need 10A to get started. So just download all of the files associated with 10A. There's 23 of them. Once you download those files, which I've downloaded here to my download folder, so I've downloaded all these files, I just run, because it's a self-extracting zip file, or RAR file in this case, so I just double-click on it, unzip it, and here I unzipped it, and what you get is you get this folder here, which has, basically, this is all ready to be imported in Hyper-V. Right? Really, this is what it's designed for, to use Hyper-V. You would just open up Hyper-V, double-click on that config file, and it would load everything up for you, ready to go. But we're not going to do that because we're not running Hyper-V. But what I want to do is I want to just grab the VHD file here in this folder, and then to make it simple for my script, I just copied it up to the root and made a copy of it. So I just grabbed it out of there, and I have a copy of the VHD file. It's a 45-gig file. So the next thing I need to do is I actually need to run CSUpload on this. So I do CSUpload in two steps. The first one is I run set connection, which basically just sets up the connection to my account. And the thing about the set connection here is that you need the... Let's try to break this down a little bit here. I need my subscription ID, which is the ID to my account. And I need my thumbprint, which is my certificate. I need the service management endpoint. Now, the trick here is to get the thumbprint is that this thumbprint, 1460, is the same one as this management certificate here. If I look at these details, 1460, so that's how I know that this thumbprint is this certificate. And I need to install this certificate locally on my machine. So I need to run Cert Manager to install that certificate on my machine. And then it's going to be one of these. So 1-4. So I now know this certificate's installed locally on my machine. I know that this is a certificate I'm going to use to register it. And I also need to know that this certificate is available on my portal. So if I come back out here to my portal site, this is the portal that I want to connect to. What I want to do to check my certificate is I want to go back to the old portal. So for the time being right now, we have most of the features moved over to this new portal, but we have still some features that are left over in the old portal that haven't been moved over yet. And managing certificates is one of those features that hasn't moved over yet. So if I look at managing my certificates, okay. We'll let that go for a second while it's doing its thing. Okay, so once I do that, basically what I'll show you is that we have the certificate installed in your management portal. You have the certificate installed locally on your local machine. Now we can actually use that certificate to do management tasks against Azure, and that's what I'm setting up here in this first line. I'm saying use this certificate against this subscription, and now everything I do after this point will be against that subscription. So the first thing I want to do is I actually want to do a CS upload, and I want to do an add disk. So I can do an add persistent VM is the other common command. And what this is going to do, add disk and add persistent VM, it's going to copy my VHD up into the storage account I specify, and it's going to register it as a disk or an image. Are you guys familiar with the difference between those? So in Azure, there's this concept of disk and images. So if I come down here into, okay, so here's my portal. So you can see here's my thumbprint, the 1460 that we saw earlier. so to see that it's, to verify that it's installed there as well. Let me come back to my preview portal. So one of the things I have here, if I come up here and create new virtual machine from gallery, I have images and I have disks. And there are platform images as well, which are also images. Now what that means is that an image and a disk are exactly the same. They're just metadata mappings to a physical file in your storage account. The only difference is that the system assumes that an image is sysprepped and a disk is not. So other than that, it's just they're exactly the same. So if you think about, is this image sysprepped and am I going to create lots of instances of it? That's an image. If it's not, if it's fixed and it's not sysprepped, that's a disk, right? And so in this case, our SharePoint image, since you can't sysprep a SharePoint image that's been already configured, we have a disk because we're kind of fixed and we create one instance of it. So that's why I want to use, add disk here. And really add disk and add VM image, the parameters are exactly the same. So you could actually take this, change this to add VM image and it'd be the same. So the first thing I need to do is I need to specify where I want to store this. So this is the destination. And here I'm going to SharePoint farm VHD's disks. And where that comes from is that in my account, find the right one here. In my account, I have this farm here called SharePoint farm storage. And if I look at this using a tool like Cloud Explorer, I can see that this same storage, I have a view of the storage called SharePoint Farm. It has a container called VHDs, and I've created a folder called disk, and that's where I'm going to upload that VHD file to. And the way that you get this is that you can just right-click on this file, choose properties, and then just cut and paste the path right out of this tool into your script. So once we specify the location I want to store it, I specify a literal path. This is where my VHD file is located that I'm going to copy. And in this case, I have that full path to that folder that was unzipped, right? To that VHD file. A label of what I want to call this image, and then a name for how that is, and then just specifying what kind of OS this thing's running. Is it a Windows or Linux, or what type of image this is that you're uploading? And that's it. So when you run that, what happens is that, you know, this goes and kicks off and it starts doing the thing. And it does a couple of things. It basically converts your image to a fixed disk, validates that it's a valid image, and then uploads the bits with retry support built in. So it's very kind of convenient. And so it does its thing and it finishes. And it's actually not too bad, right? It took 47 minutes to upload this 45 gig file, which is not too bad, considering that it expands it to 131 gig when it actually does the upload. Does anybody know why? Bonus? So it's a fixed disk, right? But if you go into a VHD or you go into Windows and say file, create new VM, and don't specify any other parameters, you get the default size. And the default size is 127 gigabyte file. But if you do it as dynamic, you don't really even know because you're only using 20 or 30 gigabyte. But when you expand it out to the full size, that's when you feel the pain. So if we look here in my files here that I have here, we can see that both of these are 130 gig. I basically just made a copy of one of these, right? So it's 130 gig. But the good side is that the way Windows Azure Storage works, it kind of sees that this is kind of an empty file. And it only charges you for the bits that you've used. So even though technically it says it's 130 gig, you're still only being billed for 45. So that's kind of a bonus. And then another thing, if you want to make copies real quickly, like let's say I have a new folder here, and call this one test. If I want to make a copy of this file, and you can do this while the image is running, you can like snap and grab a copy while it's going, right? You can just come in here and say copy. And then paste, and we're going to copy a 130 gig file just then. Done. Right? And this is all due to the way that Azure does its writes and copies on and things like that internally. But in essence, it doesn't take us any time to grab a snapshot of that file. And it makes my boss happy that he now gets charged for another 45 gig. So now what we've done is we've run that script, we've uploaded it into Azure, and what happens is the result of that is that on my disk file here, I now will see an entry for that disk that I created using the label that I gave it, right? That shows up on here. And in this case, I've created an instance of it already, and you can see that it's attached to the SPDev 2010 image, and we can see that here. If I wanted to create a new disk, all I would do is say, you know, my new disk. And then we specify the URL for this. And here in farm storage, VHDs. Now, the thing about this, and we've put this in for change, that you can't drill down into the images, and it makes it harder to see what images you have here. So you just pick the image you want, and you can attach it to your VHD file. Good? But the SP upload tool does that for you automatically, so you don't have to do that. And then once we have that disk, all we do is say new virtual machine from gallery, choose the disk, and we'll choose that file. That disk will show up here on the list. It doesn't show up on the list now because we're using it, so it removes it from the list. If I deleted that VM, the disk would show up on the list again. I could create another instance of it. Questions on that process? You guys in shock or just soccer hangover? Okay. So, yeah, that's great. You know, my developers are happy. I can upload a file. But I really wanted to do a whole SharePoint farm. So what does that look like? Well, the thing here is that a typical SharePoint farm looks like this. You have a couple web front ends. You have an app server. You have a database server. Excuse me. And you want to build your farm. Now, how many people are familiar with SharePoint and the way SharePoint works and stuff? Okay, good. So you know then that this is interesting, but really we're going to end up with something like this. Right? And what we're going to have is we're going to have, in this scenario, I have four web front ends fronted by a load balancer. So the load balancer is load balancing port 80 and 443 across those four web front ends. Then I have two app servers in the back with load balance central admin. And I have a load balancer going to the central admin box. So central admin is load balanced across port 2012. Then what we have is we want to have a database in the back end with SQL mirroring. So we have two boxes for that, and then we have a third for our SQL witness. And then finally, more interestingly, is that we actually have two AD servers running within this cloud. Now, the way that this gets a little bit complicated is that all of this is wrapped up in a virtual network. And with virtual networks, we can have cloud services. So within a cloud service, all the machines can talk to each other locally. All the ports are open, and they can all communicate locally with each other. So the web front ends can talk to the app servers and everything because they're contained within this cloud service. Now, we can also create another cloud service here for our AD machines. And the two cloud services can talk to each other because they are in the same virtual network. So in essence, it's as if they're all in the same cloud service is what it amounts to. Now, the benefit of this is that we can put our AD machines into that cloud service with DNS. Then, since there are no static IPs, right? We don't have static IPs. We have the dynamic IPs that are infinitely static or infinitely dynamic, right? We need to spin up that cloud service for the DNS first so we know the IP address of that DNS. Then once we know the IP address of our DNS servers, we can then use that as many times as we want for other applications, in this case, our SharePoint farm. So when we build our SharePoint farm, we'll tell it what the DNS is because we started that first. And now this virtual network is also connected to our corporate network through our VPN tunnel. And in this case, for this example, I have a Cisco 5505 ASA 8.3 router is what I'm using. But we support Cisco and Juniper routers. There's a support page on the MSDN that tells you the exact versions of each one. And so what that tunnel does is that allows us to now go back to AD on-premise so that our AD servers are really just acting as read-only domain controllers for our on-premise ADs that we have on our farm. And now again, with SharePoint, what's cool is that since SharePoint kind of internally does its own load balancing, we could add as many servers at any layer that we want to. If we want to add more central admin machines or more app servers, or we want to break out a couple index servers, or we want to break out, you know, Excel services, we can just add those VMs and away we go. Now, the way I originally created this is that I went into Azure, I created a new virtual machine off Windows Server, I did all the patches that needed to be done up to that point, I downloaded SharePoint bits onto that VM. I then installed all the prereqs for SharePoint. And then I installed SharePoint itself. But I didn't run psconfig. And so at that point, with that machine set up that way, and then I could optionally, what we see some of our customers doing is installing other enterprise software that they need for patching, for antivirus, for monitoring, whatever else you need on that machine, whatever else you need to appear on all of these machines, install into this image, and then save this image or capture this image as an image in your image repository. Then what I do is in my script, I can just say, create me a new image, a new machine based upon the SharePoint base image. And then I'm 90% there to having a SharePoint machine. So I only need to do that once for all the machines, because in SharePoint, all the machines are the same other than how many services you turn on, right? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Should I do this in Dutch? Do we need... That'll be my next talk. All right. Sorry, let's see what that looks like. Okay, so over here on my, let's find the right account. So here what we can see is that I have a number of virtual machines. Let me get the right one. Sort these by name. So here we can see I have a number of virtual machines. Here's my web front end one. Here's my web front end one, and you can see the list down here. So I have web front end 1 through 4. So SP-web front end 1 through 4, just like you saw in that diagram. I have SP app 1 and 2, because I had 2 app servers there. I have, in this case, I only have 2 SQL servers. I don't have the witness. So I have SP SQL 1 and 2. I have my 2 domain controllers, SPDC 1 and 2. And in this case, I actually have a SCOM 2012 image out into that virtual network as well, monitoring everything. Now, one of the things that's interesting here, if I drill down into this image, what I can see is that I have the information just like we saw before, what disk it's using, how many cores. So in this account, I have 40 cores, and I'm almost full. And the other thing I can look at is the endpoints. Now, remember, the endpoints are how you access your machines within your cloud service. Because the cloud service has a VIP, which is, you know, myapp.cloudservice.net or whatever it is, right? And that has an IP address to it. That is the only IP address that you can use to access all the machines within that cloud service. So you need to create an endpoint. The endpoint is a mapping, a port forwarding, if you will, to that. And so by default, when you create images, you'll get a RDP port created for you with an external random port number and an internal 3389 port number. And I also want to create the web front ends, all should be mapped to port 80. And since they're all mapped to the same port number, they get load balanced and grouped as a load balance set. So that's how it works. So if you have a bunch of machines and you want to load balance, just create an endpoint to the first one, create an endpoint to the second one, and say use that first one as the load balance set, and it'll start grouping them together from that point forward. Or the preferred way is to do it in PowerShell, which I'll show you. But the result is now that when I have an endpoint here, I can see that I have two endpoints. I have my RDP endpoint, so I can RDP to these files. And I have port 80 available to me. Now with port 80, if I click on this one, and since all these web front ends are mapped to port 80, what I can see is that these are load balanced, and it tells me which machines are in this load balance set. Now the other thing just to mention here is that the load balancer doesn't support sticky IP at this time, so make sure you take that into consideration when you're building your farm. All right, so let's look at this a little bit more. So now if I have this site set up, and I can actually RDP into one of these machines, let's RDP into this first web front end here. Good. Hopefully this one's faster. Good. So one of the things here to look at in this machine is if I actually browse to this machine. Here's the website I set up. It has a host header of preview.aflac.com, but it's just a standard team site here, and we can see that I'm on web front end for this preview. Now, what's interesting is that if I hit refresh, I'm always going to get the web front end. This doesn't go through the load balancer, because what I have here is I have, if we look at my host file, we can see that I have this machine mapped to 127. So it's mapped to localhost. So this machine will never actually go out through load balancer. I'm inside my cloud service. It tries to call itself, and then it does the SharePoint thing and pulls up the farm, right? But now if I'm going from the load balancer, what I need to do is I need to, from my machine, I need to set a host file up for my machine. So if we look at my local desktop here, we can see that I have the host file set up to go to the preview.aflac.com site. Now, how do I know what that is? How do I know the IP address for that machine? Excuse me. You can come here to my cloud service. Come to my cloud service and see that I have this SP app service, and it's this spapp.service.cloudapp.net, right, this one. So there's two things I can do. I can come in here to my machine, and I can do a ping. And I can see that IP address that way. So that's one technique you can use. Another good technique is if you come here onto the actual machine itself, come over here to this other search engine and say, what is my IP? Now this is going to be the Is this going to be the right one? Oh, I'm on the wrong box here. Let me close that so I don't get confused. So from my web front end here, we can come in here. And this shows you here the same one. Now this is, again, kind of another way of sanity check, because you'll get, sometimes you'll get confused and things will be weird and you want to make sure. So from the VM inside of the cloud service, you're asking, hey, what's my IP address? Because that's going to be the IP address of your cloud service. So it's another good technique to figure it out. Now once I have that, I have my IP address set locally. I can actually come out here and browse to that site, and it gives me my site. But which machine did that go through? Right? Are my load balancers working? How do I know? Right? This is the trick. So one of the things that I've done here is that if you come here to the web front end, come out here to Program Files, Common Files, Microsoft Shared, Web Server Extensions, 14, Templates, where are we at here? Let me look at this real quick here. And if I edit my master page here, let me grab the one here. So if I edit my master page, what we can see here is on my master page, what I've done is I've added at the very top of my master page, I've added just a little comment there for, and I went through each master page, because the master pages in SharePoint are cached on each local machine. So now what that gives me, so it's really cool because now I can just do an F12 and I can see which web front end that I hit, right? I hit the third one here. So it's a really cool way to tell which machine that you are on. If I refresh here, now that's the third one, the second one, first one. So you can see that I'm rotating through my load balance set, and you can see real easily which machine you're hitting. But the thing is that I didn't hit the fourth one. And the reason I didn't hit the fourth one is that when I created the load balance sets, and here I am in PowerShell to do this, I went through each virtual machine here, and I added a new endpoint, and the endpoint was called web, which is what you saw here in the virtual machines. So in the virtual machines under endpoints, there's a web point in here called web on port 80 and port 80. But what you can't do in the portal that you can do in PowerShell is that I can actually group these and name them into a load balance set and give them an actual name myself. Then I can specify the public port and the local port. And this next part's important, which you can't do in the portal, is I can actually specify a probe path. And so the probe path is the thing that the load balancer is going to call to verify whether that service is alive or not. And so if you just went in the portal and created a load balance set, it'll always try to just call port 80 and see if that's alive, that it'll do it. But with a custom probe set, it looks to try to open that file, and it can be anything you want to call it. I called it is okay. It tries to open that file, and if it gets a 200 response, it's good. Anything else, it's not good. So you could write code. You could make this an ASPX page if you wanted to. You could write code in that file to determine whether you want to return a 200 to the load balancer or not. Maybe you want to have the load balancer back off and you say return a 400 or a 500 error or something like that, right? And the load balancer will stop sending you traffic for a little while. So you decide what you want to do in that probe path in that file. Check the memory, check the hard drive, check the users, whatever you want to do to determine whether you want the traffic sent to you or not, you can do within that set. So once you specify the pro path, what you need to do here, and we can actually go do this on one of these here. Let's go look at number four. So here we are on server number four. If I go into IIS Manager, open up the sites. Now what I can see here is I have three sites. I have that site that SharePoint set up, which is the host header site or preview.afflight.com. I have my default website. Now what you need to do is you need to add the probe to the default website. And since I said that the probe path was, if you remember here, the probe path was health check is okay, I need to create that same file here. So what I do is I basically just add a virtual directory. So add a virtual directory called health check. And then the path is going to be, could be anywhere. Let's just put it in the same place, inetpub, wwroot. We'll create a folder called health check. And then we'll say OK. Next thing you need to do is, in order for the load balancer to access it, it has to be anonymous. So we'll just come over here and verify that anonymous is enabled. So it's good. Next thing we need to do is we need to add that file. So we'll come over here to the content, and we'll explore. We'll right-click. We'll add a new file here called isOK.htm. Now, what you might want to need to do is, since these are default setups, make sure that you really have a HTM file, not a text file. So that one's good there. Now, we have now our health check file. So we look at the contents here. Let me refresh. So I should be able to just browse for this file and hit it. But I can't, right? One of the things that happens by default is that when you set up SharePoint, SharePoint doesn't automatically turn on the default website for you. So you just need to start the default website. Now we should be able to come here to our health check file, come here and then browse. And now, since I have my health check logic in there, which is fairly complicated, which is no code, it's worked. So now we should get, the load balancer should start sending us traffic. The question is, how long will it take for it to pick it up, whether it's 15 or 30 seconds? And do we have enough time to wait for it to find it? So let's see here. Try it again. Sometimes it's a good sign that it's taking a long time because it probably hit the fourth one, which hadn't been spun up yet. So SharePoint's going through the first time, you know, warm up phase. So that's good. Any questions on that? Basically, kind of understanding how the probes work and think lots of stuff you can do and how to configure that and set that up. So the probe is, I believe, it's every 15 seconds, and what's interesting here is that if you come in here and do get help, like, how many people are familiar with PowerShell? Cool, yeah. So you can do get help, and then you can do, we want to do our add Azure endpoint. If we do add Azure endpoint, and then we'll do full, it tells us in here, rate here, it gets 15 seconds and then it'll try again 15 seconds later, and then on the 31st second it'll stop sending you traffic. There was an open question I was reading this morning on the internal aliases that we have, which was, how long does it take to add it back in? And that's something that I need to look up myself to find that out. So that's an open question for me in my mind. Good? Yes? Did our page load? No? Yes? Yes. And we got number four, see? It took a long time because that was the first time that that image had spun up that web front end. So if you're going to create more web front ends, just like in, you know, the cloud is scalable, you can just add more instances onto your farm, add them to the load balance set, and then they instantly start growing and scaling your farms. Cool? Cool, cool. All right, got a little bit of time left. Last thing I want to talk about is PowerShell. You know, it's great that we can go into the website and, you know, our managers like to click around and things and it's all, you know, wonderful and happy. But really, the way we get work done is through script, right? The way that we want to run our development is through script. We don't want to have a 15-page document explaining the steps you click on and hope that somebody goes and clicks on them correctly in the right order. You want to have it in PowerShell. You want to be able to repeat it. You want to be able to source control that script. You want to be able to have someone validate it, and you want to be able to do it over and over again into many environments. So really, the way that this happens is through PowerShell. And the way the PowerShell works is that there's a management API in Windows Azure. It's a REST-based API. It's allows you to do everything you can do in Windows Azure. And the PowerShell scripts are, in essence, just a wrapper on top of those REST APIs. But they allow you to do everything that you can do in the REST APIs, but from a friendly PowerShell-centric model that most IT pros will understand. So, let's go here. So let's take a look at what it takes to build a virtual machine using PowerShell. So this code may seem a little daunting. We'll go through it step by step. If you're not a developer and you feel nauseous, just look away for a minute. So the first thing we want to do is we want to create our configuration information for our web front end. And this is telling us what size VM do we want to use, what's the name of the image that we want to use, or disk if you want to create one from a disk. So this would be like my SharePoint base image.vhd in my Foo storage account, right? That's the name that would go there. And then the size of the instance that we want, and then the availability set that we're going to put these in. So you want to group all the web front ends into an availability set, you'd have that there. So that's the first one. Now, the thing about PowerShell is that PowerShell can be fairly straightforward or fairly complicated. And, of course, they decide to make it complicated by piping everything together into one command. So you can see at the end of this line, there's actually a pipe which sends the output to the next command and what's it doing. So you could break it apart, make it a little bit easier to understand. But this is the way the examples are so far. So the next thing we want to do is we want to get the provisioning configuration. Now, the way the PowerShell works in the way that the VMs work in Azure is that when you go to the website and you fill out all that information, when you say file, create from gallery, and ask you for your username and password, that's the information that's going here. And basically what that builds is it builds an unattended XML file that gets passed to the image, and that's how it gets created during the sysprep process, right? When it goes from a generalized state to a specific state. So here we're going to say, what's the name of the administrator password? What domain do you want me to join? Right? Because we already set up our domain controllers already, and now we're taking our farm and joining it to that domain. So what domain controllers do you want me to join? What's the machine name you want, the object, right? And so on and so forth. And again, then take that output and pipe it to the next line. Here's where I can create my endpoints. So you saw in the code I showed you earlier, I can just go and create endpoints on the fly. But it's better to create them while you're doing this. The reason is if you did it in the code, it actually takes a little bit of time because it stops all the VMs in the cloud service for each line. So it stops everything, spins it back up, stops everything, adds the endpoint. But if you do it this way, it's much faster. So this is exactly what you saw before. You know, we have our probe path, we have our the IP address and port number that we want to go. And then we can also set our subnet here as well, so which subnet we want to go to. So last thing here is we specify our DNS name. Now again, this is why we set that cloud service up first with our two AD machines in it, so that now when we build our farm, we can tell it which IP address to use for the DNS server, and now all these machines will know how to talk to each other and know how to talk to the DNS server. And then finally, this is where everything really happens. So I create a new Azure VM. I specify the name of the cloud service that I want to create it in, right? So that was that cloud service container. I specify the affinity group that I want it to be in, what virtual network do I want that to be into. I specify the DNS settings, which is the DNS that we just built here. And then I pass in all of the names that I want to do in this one operation. So basically, all that stuff up and above, you would copy that for every VM that you want to create. So I'd have four web front ends, I'd have two app servers, I'd have whatever, I have my SQL servers. And then in one operation, I would create all those at one time. And it just blows out that whole farm at one shot. Questions on this? Easy, hard? Easy? Just text? Yeah? Okay, good. All right, so let's look here. We have just a few more minutes, and then I'll leave some time at the end so we can do some questions. So one of the things here is that we saw this a little bit already. Let me start from the beginning here and how you get started, because it's kind of important here. So the thing you want to do is you want to go to Windows Azure. WindowsAzure.com is the starting point. So if you're doing development, the first thing you want to do is you want to come to the .NET Developer Center. You want to click on this and install the SDK. Now you can choose to do either the 2010 SDK or the 2012 SDK. Both of these are, in this case, are the 1.7 SDK that's out today. And they install side by side. So in my case, for example, I'm running both versions of Visual Studio, and I have both versions of the SDK installed, and everything works fine. So once you install the SDK, the next thing you want to do is install the developer tools to do the PowerShell management. And it's a little bit harder to find. Excuse me. But you click on the Manage tab. And then on the Manage tab, we can click on Other. Downloads. And then here is our PowerShell scripts. There are other PowerShell tools for Mac and Linux as well if you want to do some management from those OSs as well. But this is the one that I have installed here. And then that's good. So once you install the PowerShell, the next thing to do is install, in this case I use PowerGUI. I think it's probably the best tool to use. Becomes very easy. It has IntelliSense. I can do line-by-line debugging and so on and so forth. I can run both in script mode and interactive mode, and it's free, so can't beat the price. So just do a search on the web for PowerGUI and install that. So one of the things I want to do now, the first thing I want to do is show you is, starting from the beginning, I've installed the scripts. I've got my PowerShell all set up. Next thing I need to do is I need to install my account. So the thing is, there's a getting started page that's part of the help when you first get started, and you really want to follow this. This has everything you need to get started here. But what's interesting is this tells you pretty much everything I just told you. But when you get down to the bottom here, the import the publishing settings, if you go to this path here, what this will do is this will download a published settings file for you that contains a certificate that you just then can import into PowerShell, and that will cache your credentials locally on your machine. So you just browse to whatever Azure site you want to access. It'll download the credentials with an embedded thumbprint for your certificate. You can import that into PowerShell. And then once you import that into PowerShell, you can then do things like get Azure subscriptions, and we can see, let's do a sort by subscription name, Did this run? Yeah, so you can see here, I have a number of different Azure accounts that I have available to me, and I've imported the subscriptions for all of these, so I can just easily switch between them and run commands against this one, and that one, to that one. So if I'm moving stuff from production to staging or from development to staging, you can, as an administrator, easily switch between the accounts and do actions on both accounts. So if I want to look at, like, so I get Azure subscription current, I can see which one currently I have selected. And I have this DG one selected here, which is this account here. And so, for example, if I look at disks, I can see that I have a number of disks available. I have two images, so let's look at images. So if I come back to my PowerShell and I do get Azure VM image and run that, what we can see here, let's do select image name. So you can see all the images that I have available to me. Now these ones at the top are the images, the platform images that are built in. And these are the two down at the bottom that I have that are my own custom images, these two base images. So when I look at this, you can see that these are my two custom images, right, that I see on that list. And then the platform images, I can't really see from here, but if I go to virtual machine images, these are all of those platform images that show up on that list. Right? Okay, so basically what I want to do here is I just want to walk you through some of the code. The first thing I did was I created my virtual network. I get the subscription that I want to use, which is the active one that I want to do. I can determine my locations that I want to use, like which locations of the data center are available. So I can just come here and do that, and it gives me a list back of a number of data centers. So this is this one here that I'm in. So I can then set information about those data centers. I can create a new affinity group. I can create a new virtual network configuration. Now, the virtual network configuration is based upon a file. So if I actually look at that file and see what that looks like, this is something that you have to create by hand, but you can do it once and then save it fairly easily. So this is the virtual network configuration file. And all it's really telling me is, like, what is my local instance going to be called of my virtual network? What IP address range do you want to use for that local instance? And what is my virtual network site? So this one here is Aflac VNet. And you can see the local one here, which is my on-premise virtual network through my VP, is Aflac DC. And we can see that here in my network. So here's my Aflac VNet. So here's my Aflac virtual network. And here's my Aflac local network, which is the network defined in my office in my VP through the VPN. And then I can see the gateway that's set up. I can see the machines that are part of this virtual network. I can look at the subnets that are associated with this. So I have front-end, DNS, and back-end. We can see that those are set up here. So then I create the storage account to store everything in, and I create that network based upon that configuration file, which is, let me show you that here. So here are those three subnets that I defined, front-end, DNS, and back-end. So that's how those get showed up in the configuration file. Then once I do that, I can create my domain controllers. Now creating the domain controllers is exactly like you saw earlier. I create my configuration information, what I want to call the machine. Then I just simply go and create those domain controllers right here in the bottom. Right, that's the code you saw on the slides. Then what I do is once I create the domain controllers, I actually RDP into those machines, run DC promo, do whatever I need to do to set up my domain, and away I go. Now that could be automated as well, we just don't have that set up. One other thing that I do on my base images is I turn on remote PowerShell so that I could continue to PowerShell DC promo from here, from this script, if I wanted to. So that's another thing to do. So then all I need to do is create my SharePoint farm. Now the SharePoint farm is exactly like creating everything else. I created two machines for my domain controller, and now I just want to create six more machines for my web front ends, my SQL, and so on and so forth. The only difference is which image I'm going to use for those. So the SQL boxes I use, the SQL image, and the SharePoint boxes, the SharePoint images, and the domain controllers I use just the base image. Other than that, the process is exactly the same. I specify the configuration information for all those machines. So there's web front end 2, 3, and 4. Here's my app servers, 1 and 2. My SQL machines. Now the SQL machines, the only difference is I'm actually attaching two data disks. Remember, you can attach up to 16 1 terabyte disks to your VMs. So I'm going to attach two data disks, one for data, one for logs. So that's different. Other than that, create my DNS, just like we did before, and then just run the script which says create the VMs. That's it. That's as simple as it gets. And then after that, that's pretty much it. There's nothing. Creating the VMs is exactly the same. You could also, again, like I showed you earlier, go in and create the load balance set if you want to, or create them as part of the image. So with that, you know, call to action is get a test subscription, go get a free subscription in Azure. You probably already have it. If you have MSDN, you already get free Azure time. Download the SDK, download PowerShell, upload the SharePoint image, and get started. A couple other talks going on this week, so take a look at those for the slides. Standard stuff. If you remember, tweet the session title, and I'll send out some stuff once I get back to the office. And with that, thank you. Please fill out your evals, and if you have any questions, just come on down and chat, and we can talk about it. But thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the day.